The following program, Normal Show Live, is intended for responsible adults only. We advocate for the repeal of marijuana prohibition for adults. We discuss the science, culture, and controversy about America's marijuana laws. We do not advocate or encourage any illegal activity and advise all listeners to learn their state and federal marijuana laws by visiting normal.org, N-O-R-M-L.org. Opinions and claims made by guests and advertisers of Normal Show Live are their own and do not necessarily reflect the philosophy and policies of Normal. Listener discretion is advised.
You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it. You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it,
and it goes down smooth. Hey!
Spanning the continent to bring you the truth about cannabis and marijuana law reform.
I smoke pot and I like it a lot.
From the promise of legalization.
And I think we need to rethink and decriminalize our marijuana laws.
To the agony of prohibition.
Well, one major responsibility is to encourage people to use less drugs.
The National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws presents...
We love the earth.
Normal Show Live! Marijuana Nation! Now, here's your host, Normal's Outreach Coordinator, Radical Russ Belville.
Good afternoon, Tokers and Tokettes. It is Monday, April 11th, 2011, and it's got to be 420 somewhere in the world. Thanks for joining us for the show today. We've got a week of great shows for you as we get ready for the Normal National Conference taking place next week. All sorts of announcements we have to tell you about that. But before we do, let's welcome back to the studio the engineer, Ganja John.
What's up, Russ?
Oh, we're glad you're back, man. I hope you're feeling better.
I feel a lot better. I'm full of energy.
Full of energy. Now, unfortunately, not joining us today on the show is our intern, Coleco. We told him there'd be a drug test today, and he took off. Yeah, there he goes. He didn't realize it was multiple choice. That's the thing.
Yeah.
Also joining us from our virtual studio in beautiful Grass Storia, Oregon, is the lovely Cannabis Carrie.
Hello, Russ. Hello, Ganja John. Welcome back.
Hey, Carrie.
Yeah.
I have an important announcement for you.
Oh, yeah? Go ahead.
Today is the 200th anniversary of the arrival of John Jacob Astor to Astoria.
Actually, I hate to put a damper on this. Not really him, but his company.
His company, Astoria. Right. John Jacob Astor's company. That's right. I saw the tweet. I should have been more explicit about it. His company showed up and formed the town that you're living in right now. And that's the reason we call it Astoria, because there is no such person as John Jacob Astor.
Yes. And later sold it to the Brits. We actually belonged to the Brits for a time.
Oh, that's kind of interesting. All right. Carrie's got our hemp headlines for us right after the first break. What's in the news today?
Well, a whole bunch of not Astoria news. We've got some action alerts from Paul Armentano. We're going to go to Indiana, where they seem to have a problem with their state toxicology lab. And also out on the East Coast, sort of like near beer, we've got a fast track to some near medical marijuana.
Near medical marijuana. All right. That sounds good. Coming up at 20 after, we've got our Roots Monday music with Cannabob, who is the host of the Viper Hour. You'll hear a new edition of the Viper Hour tonight on the Normal Network at 5 o'clock Pacific, 8 o'clock Eastern. Today's song's from Kevin O'Grady, and there's a video as well. It's called The Marijuana Song, and it's recorded live at an Irish pub. I'm really looking forward to that.
Awesome.
Coming up at half past, we're going to have a cannabis conversation on a very controversial topic just north of us in Washington State. Kevin Oliver, the executive director of Washington Normal, and Allison Holcomb, the director of the drug policy group there at the ACLU of Washington, are here to talk about SB 5073, the dispensary and registry bill for medical marijuana in the state of Washington. A lot of controversy around it. We'll try to iron that out. And then at the end of the show, Eric Williams from Connecticut Normal's here to talk about a decrim vote tomorrow. Tomorrow in Connecticut. All that and more, plus
you're listening to Normal Show Live, the voice of the marijuana nation.
In today's busy world, we're inundated by advertising for all types of pharmaceuticals that come with a laundry list of potential side effects. Shouldn't you have better medical choices? Natural alternatives to pills pushed by Big Pharma? At Alternative Medical Choices, you could choose natural, safe, and effective alternative therapies that are right for your budget without nasty side effects. Cannabis, or marijuana, has been a legal medicine in the Pacific Northwest since 1998. Our doctors will help determine your qualifications for a medical marijuana recommendation in Oregon, no matter where you live. Our massage therapists will ease your aches and stress with soothing hemp seed oil or cannabis-infused massage salves. We also offer acupuncture, Reiki, and other alternative health therapies. Call Alternative Medical Choices in Portland, Oregon at 503-288-5579 or visit our website at www.altmedchoices.com. We specialize in out-of-state recommendations. That's www.altmedchoices.com or call 503-288-5579.
The fact is today, people don't go to jail for possession of marijuana. I know you like to pretend it does, and there's a lot of misinformation about that. But finding somebody in jail or prison for a first-time nonviolent offender for possession of marijuana is like finding a unicorn. You find one, you will make a big story because it doesn't exist. Finding somebody in jail or prison for a first-time nonviolent offender for possession of marijuana is like finding a unicorn, finding a unicorn, finding a unicorn.
Narnal Show Live, the National Wildlife Refuge for Marijuana Unicorns.
I'm gonna light me a pipe of inspiration. I'm gonna blow away troubles on my head. I'm gonna leave this plastic place to your plastic jubilees and travel to a better place and travel to a better place and travel to a better place instead.
Medical marijuana, industrial hemp, consumer cannabis. It's time for this week's Normal News with Cannabis Carrie.
We have some action alerts from Paul Armentano that you need to know about. First up, legislation has been introduced in the Nevada Assembly that would allow state-licensed dispensaries. The issue for many legal medical marijuana patients is access to the marijuana. Growing your own cannabis is a daunting and time-consuming task for healthy people, and even then you will need to find clones or seeds or starter plants along with about a 5 or 6 month supply of cannabis while you wait for your plants to grow. Assembly Bill 438 proposes to permit medical marijuana dispensaries in the state of Nevada. Licensed dispensaries would be permitted under the law to legally acquire, possess, cultivate, manufacture, deliver, transfer, transport, supply, sell, or dispense marijuana and marijuana-related supplies and educational materials to authorized patients or their caregivers. The bill does not restrict the existing state medical marijuana law, which does allow qualified patients and caregivers the option to grow limited amounts of marijuana for their own medical use. AB 438 has been referred to the Committee of Health and Human Services, but so far, Committee Chair April Mastroluca has refused to schedule it for a hearing. A hearing on AB 438 must be called for by this Friday, or it is dead for the session. So it is imperative that you urge your Nevada representatives to stand up for Nevada's patients and support AB 438. We have a list of committee members on the web and a place where you can enter your zip code to contact your state representatives at stash.normal.org.
Yeah, good news there in Nevada, you know, working to get dispensaries for the patients after, what, like 10 years of the program going on? But, you know, better late than never. And it's good here that they're wanting to institute a dispensary system, but not take away the right to home grow. That's something that I have some concerns about as these medical marijuana states start looking at instituting dispensary systems, that they don't go, ah, see, you have a dispensary now, you don't need to grow your own and invite that danger from home invasion robbers and all of that. So be careful about that, activists. As we're working for dispensaries, don't ever let them take away the right to home grow.
And one more for Paul. Lawmakers in Maine have introduced legislation that seeks to legalize and regulate the production, distribution, and sale of marijuana to adults. Legislative document 1453 seeks to regulate the commercial production and distribution of marijuana for adults who are over the age of 21 years. This measure would impose licensing requirements and excise taxes on the commercial for-profit retail sale of cannabis. LD 1453 would impose a 7% tax on commercially distributed cannabis, and that money would go directly into the state general fund each and every month. It would not impose taxes on adults who grow and possess marijuana for personal use or who share their cannabis with other adults. If passed, LD 1453 would make Maine the first state in the nation to enact a rational public policy for the control and regulation of marijuana. We urge you to show your support of this common sense proposal by contacting your state representatives in Maine, and we can help you with a pre-written email if you so choose by visiting our site at stash.normal.org.
All right. And wouldn't it be interesting if all after all this time, everybody looking at California, Washington, Oregon, Colorado, Massachusetts, if the first place to legalize would be Maine? I mean, I don't think a lot of people would really see that coming, although it would make a lot of sense. Maine has got a large degree of marijuana consumption up there, and it's been kind of a cottage industry for many, many years. I mean, even Stephen King has that famous quote saying that marijuana, and he's, you know, a resident of Maine, where he says that, you know, marijuana should be legalized. It'd be a great cottage industry up here in the state. So we hope the folks up there in Maine take a look at that and seriously consider passing that. There's no reason that they shouldn't, and they can be leaders in this movement and show the rest of the country that there's nothing to fear from legalization.
And a story from Mark Wilson with the Evansville Courier Press says that the state Indiana Department of Toxicology is reporting some errors with their test results. An audit of the lab's results from 2007 to 2009 turned up problems with at least 200 of the marijuana test results during that time period. According to Larry McIntyre, a spokesman for the department, he says the errors deal with the issues such as handling of samples, lab processes, and in a few cases, interpretation. Ultimately, the procedures that were used to test samples did not comply with the high standards needed to satisfy the courts. Due to these concerns, the department sent 14 letters last week to prosecutors letting them know about the problems and possible implications for their cases. Questions have been raised whether some prosecutors may have known about a problem with the testing in certain cases, but failed to disclose it to defense attorneys. A Brady violation is named by the U.S. Supreme Court that established it. In many cases, the changed results in the test would not affect the outcome of cases, since the results of those tests remained positive, and it was levels that tested differently. In many cases, the outcome is either a yes or a no. Presence of cannabis is either there or not there. Test results can make a significant difference in some cases, though. One example was a traffic accident that ended in a fatality. The defendant's initial test resulted positive for prescription medication and marijuana. The prescription medication was found to be normal levels for expected use, but when the defense called for further testing, the test found no marijuana markers were present in the blood, and the case was dismissed as an accident. Issues that will arise due to the audit will be how to reopen some cases that might have been affected and who will pay for it. With counties already swamped with court caseloads, revisiting old cases would be a problem. Prosecutors do not need to rely on the state lab for blood testing, though. They can be sent to private labs, but it would come out of their own budgets. In the meantime, attorneys will be questioning the reliability of the state lab data, and in many cases, those attorneys will be looking at getting tests from other labs. So far, the audit only covered marijuana testing, but there is an audit pending for cocaine and alcohol as well.
You know, the whole issue of drug testing, though, is just suspect in the first place. You know, I think a lot of people look at this, you know, these crime labs and all of this, and they think that it's like CSI, like, you know, the DNA evidence, you know, one trillion chance this could be someone else kind of thing. You know, that there's a scientific accuracy with regard to the chemistry of your bloodstream and how impaired you might have been behind the wheel or how able you are to be able to function at a job or something like that. And the fact is that your chemistry does not determine those things. They can be factors in trying to determine whether you were impaired, but they in and of themselves do not prove impairment. So right off the bat, I already have the problem with drug testing. And then you add on to this, like we're finding in Indiana, where they're having problems with the procedures of the drug testing or the interpretation of the drug testing or not sharing the drug testing with the defense attorneys. All these other kind of problems that can exist just show once and again that drug testing is not something we should be relying on to administer justice in this country. It's unfair, and we should furthermore just go ahead and legalize cannabis so that most of the drug testing will be unnecessary anyway.
While it is not quite a medical marijuana bill, Senate Bill 308 would allow a medical defense in Maryland, and it passed the House of Delegates on Saturday after being amended and approved by the House Judiciary Committee late last week. The measure was already approved by the state Senate, but will now go back to the Senate for a final vote as amended before making its way to the desk of Governor Martin O'Malley. The bill will allow for Maryland citizens who could show the court evidence that their marijuana use is a medical necessity if charged with a marijuana crime to be found not guilty by the court. The courts would need as evidence medical records, they could hear sworn testimony, or they could accept written statements from a licensed professional that the person is likely to receive therapeutic or palliative relief from marijuana. Under this system, patients could still be arrested, but just not convicted. The bill builds on the 2003 Daryl Putman Compassionate Use Act that allowed for a medical necessity defense, but only to limit the sentence. Patients currently can be found guilty, but will be stuck with a misdemeanor conviction record, and they can be fined a maximum of $100. Now, if passed, the courts will now find a not guilty plea to those that can show their use is a medical necessity. Although the law does not address cultivation, it does contain a provision that calls for the study of a more comprehensive legislation bill next year. Advocates in the state were hoping to have medical marijuana legislation introduced this year, but the Secretary of the Department of Health and Mental Hygiene derailed plans by decrying the cost of implementing the program in such a budget deficit year. The cost of the medical marijuana defense bill is now estimated at $49,300 from the general fund to pay for the one-time employee to staff the study group. The cost of patients hiring lawyers was not mentioned in the legislation.
Yeah, okay. Well, thanks, Maryland, for doing the least you could do for patients. Literally, the least you could do. What they have on the law right now, on the books right now in Maryland, is an affirmative defense, and it works like this. If you're a medical marijuana patient and the cops catch you with weed, they'll arrest you, they'll throw you in the back of the squad car with handcuffs on, they'll take you down to the station, fingerprint you, take your picture, throw you in a holding cell for a little while, arrange for bail, you'll call a bail bondsman, get yourself bailed out of jail, and then you'll be set for an arraignment, you'll be set for a hearing, you'll end up going to the hearing after you hire yourself a lawyer, if you can afford a lawyer, or you'll get yourself a public defender, and you'll go to court, and you'll put together all your evidence and a statement to the court and get your doctor's recommendation, your doctor's records to show that you have a medical condition that validated your use of marijuana, and then the court could find you guilty and fine you and then leave you with a misdemeanor record. So to solve that problem, Maryland's going to make it so that if you're a patient and the cops catch you with marijuana, the cops can throw you in the back of the squad car, slap some handcuffs on the back while they take you to the station, they fingerprint you in the ID and take your picture and hold you in a holding cell for a while you get bail and get a bail bond and get yourself bailed out of jail, find out when your time is for an arraignment, go down to the court, get yourself an attorney or a public defender if you can't hold one, go out, get to the doctor, get all your medical recommendations, get all your medical records, show the judge that you have an affirmative defense for your use of marijuana that justified its use, and then they'll find you innocent. See, the one little change at the end of that whole process will find you innocent. Hey, I got a better idea, Maryland. Why don't you look at the other 15 states that have instituted functioning medical marijuana programs? Actually, they're not all functioning yet. New Jersey and Arizona have yet to function. But still, we got plenty of states out there with functioning medical marijuana programs that have registries where people who have a medical use can go to their doctor, get all their records, get all their recommendations, prove that they have a qualifying condition. But once they get that card, they don't have to be arrested. They don't have to be booked, fingerprinted, taken to the station, have to bail out, get themselves an attorney, go to court, and present an affirmative defense. Are you really that wedded to arresting patients? Really? You feel that the marijuana is so deadly dangerous and out of control with healthy people that we're going to have to arrest everyone with pot and then sort out the patients in the courtroom? That's really what this amounts to. Now, don't get me wrong. We want this to pass. I mean, any protection that you can get for sick and disabled people from doing time in a prison cell for their illness, for treating it with safe, non-toxic, and effective cannabis, that's a good thing. Don't get me wrong. That's definitely a good thing. But it is literally the least they can do, this affirmative defense situation. So, folks, if you want to get involved, call the folks out there in Maryland, call those legislators, tell them yes to support this affirmative defense, but when it comes around to the next session, they've got to get around to passing real medical marijuana for the people. All right, folks, that's our hemp headlines today. And before we round out this segment, I want to let you know what's coming up later today on the Normal Network. Coming up at Monday, or coming up today, yeah, today is Monday. It certainly is Monday. Coming up today after Toker Talk Radio at 3 o'clock Pacific, you'll get to hear the replay of the Ganja John Show, followed at 4 o'clock with our replay of this hour of Normal Show Live. And then the primetime lineup begins at 5 o'clock or 8 o'clock Eastern with a new episode of the Viper Hour, the best in reefer jazz from the 20s and 30s, followed at 8 o'clock Central or 6 o'clock Pacific with Drug Truth Network. That includes Century of Lies and Cultural Baggage from Dean Becker down there in Houston, Texas. At 8 o'clock Mountain, 10 Eastern or 7 Pacific, you'll get to hear the new episode of John Doe Radio, just recorded today. And then following that, 8 o'clock Pacific, 11 o'clock Eastern, you've got Cannabis Agenda, the podcast from Humboldt County, California. I am having trouble speaking today.
Yeah.
And it's not the mumbles either.
Yeah, it's not.
Maybe that's the problem.
Maybe.
And then the whole primetime replay lineup happens at 9 o'clock Pacific or midnight Eastern. Normal Show Live, Viper Hour, Drug Truth Network, John Doe Radio, and Cannabis Agenda. It's 24/7 here at the Normal Network. You tune in anytime. You're going to hear a great podcast, and you're going to learn something.
Well, I can't believe you're going to play the Ganja John Show in the afternoon, so let's take a break.
we are, man. It's a good show. We'll be back after this.
It's 20 after the hour, and we have to take a short break, if you know what I mean. Please support these sponsors who support Normal Show Live.
Oh, have you ever met that funny reefer man? A reefer man. Have you ever met that funny reefer man? Reefer man. If he said he swam to China, he would send you South Carolina. Then you know you're talking to that reefer man.
Normal National Conference 2011, Denver, Colorado, April 21st through 23rd.
I'm not a crook.
When President Nixon declared war on marijuana smokers, Normal was founded by a young lawyer named Keith Straub. And now, in our 40th year, Normal is coming of age as states begin discussing outright marijuana legalization.
Entirely legitimate topic for debate.
Join us in Denver, Colorado, the day after 420 for our 40th annual National Conference. You'll learn about marijuana law, cannabis science, and the grassroots activism necessary to end prohibition. Set in the Mile High City, America's cannabis capital. Special guests include medical marijuana pioneer and Harvard Emeritus Dr. Lester Grinspoon, U.S. Congressman Jared Polis, and Normal founder Keith Straub. Normal National Conference 2011, coming of age in Denver, Colorado, April 21st through 23rd. It's the true Rocky Mountain High. Don't touch that dial. We'll be right back after a word from these 420 friendly sponsors. Wait a minute. This is internet radio. There are no dials here. It's time for your daily Toker Tunes, the best in 420-friendly music from all genres that uplifts, entertains, and informs the public. Today we bring you tunes for Roots Monday, our celebration of the music that evolved into the popular modern music of today. We pick the best of blues, country, folk, and jazz with a 420 feel and serve it up for you every Monday. Brought to you by Cannabis Carry in Astoria, Oregon, and CannabisFantastic.com. If you'd like to submit your song to be played on Normal Show Live, send it to us at stash@normal.org. Now here's some more great independent marijuana music for today's Daily Toker Tune.
Hello and welcome to the Roots Monday Toker Tune. I'm Cannaball, and I'm also your host for the Viper Hour, where we play that great old reefer jazz from the 20s and 30s every Monday at 5 p.m. Pacific, right here on the Normal Network. Today we have an Australian folk song that you may have heard in the Normal Show Live Toker Tunes rotation. And again, we have video to go along with today's song for those of you that are watching at live.normal.org. Kevin O'Grady, also known as the Tasmaniac, does this tune simply called the Marijuana Song. And a little story about the video. While out shooting for a documentary on rural Irish pub life, Chris Patel met Kevin O'Grady at the Spaniard Pub in Kinsale, Ireland. After being lucky enough to witness this performance in person, he posted this video on YouTube, which instantly became a hit. So spark one up as we watch and listen to Kevin O'Grady with the Marijuana Song.
What have you think, though?
The Marijuana Song.
Yeah, boy. Yeah. This is going to be a number one hit. It's way better than the Lennon Song.
This is a song about the No Smoking Ban. We had a No Smoking Ban in Australia, but they, we changed it. They just had a No Smoking Ban here in Ireland. Down in Australia, had to change the rules. All the kids were getting busted, smoking drugs in school. We couldn't have our young politicians growing up with drug convictions, Paul. Just change the rules, smoking that marijuana. Australiana, saving them pills, cheaper than food, get you like a bent banana, smoking that marijuana. Australiana, saving them pills, saving them food, you can buy it from your local farm.
One, two.
Down in Tasmania, that's where I come from. Galaxos grow poppies everywhere, and we're all on the opium. Up there in Sydney, that's the gay community. They're having a real gay time, cause they're all on the ecstasy. And up there in Queensland, think they've got the class. Look out their back garden, they're all grown grass, smoking that marijuana. Australiana, saving them pills, keeping them food, get you like a bent banana, smoking that marijuana. Australiana, saving them pills, keeping them food, you can buy it from your local farmer. Over here in Europe, that's a bloody joke. They tell us all what to do and they're all snorting coke.
Absolutely.
It's legal in Holland. It's legal in Switzerland. When I was smoking in Deutschland, they just didn't give a damn. Over there in England, they've got the Union Jack. Bunch of bloody know-it-alls and they're all smoking crack. Smoking it. Marijuana. Australiana, saving them pills, saving them food, to get you like a bent banana, smoking that marijuana. Australiana, saving them pills, saving them food, you can buy from your local farmer. Over here in Ireland, Catholic Church has got the cash. No one really gives a toss, they're too busy smoking hash. What about the Americans? Hey, what about the Americans?
Connecticut!
What about the Americans? They turned into mugs. They lost the war in Vietnam and they lost the war on drugs. So spread the word about the herb to herb. Go outside, plant a few seeds, grow a few weeds, and let's get high. Marijuana, Australia.
You want a copy of that song for your iPod? Oh. Check out the Daily Toker Tunes at the Stash blog by surfing to stash.normal.org and choosing Media and then Toker Tunes from the main menu.
Starfish Designs, makers of the original Gandalf.
I'm Radical Russ, and when I want to relax, I always have my 17-inch long original Gandalf from Starfish Designs nearby. The hand-blown borosilicate glass is strong and easy to clean, and the design is sleek and sophisticated. Starfish Designs are available from Bend, Oregon at a glass retailer near you. For locations, call 541-788-GLASS. That's 541-788-4527.
U.S. Vietnam I'll go. Broke down barrier. Herb is medicine to. Broke down barrier. Boost the economy and. Broke down barrier. It's helping other states. Broke down barrier. Cannabis for legalized to. Broke down barrier. Join and speak your voice. Broke down barrier. We gonna change the law. Broke down barrier. We got to educate. Broke down barrier. Yeah, this is Nayora, you know, bigging up USVI Normal, working to legalize cannabis, you know, for the whole of the Virgin Islands.
USVI Normal is a non-profit organization working to legalize cannabis for the use by the industries and responsible adults. Do your part. Join USVI Normal. Register to vote. Pass the word. Voice your opinion. You can change the law. Contact us for more information at 340-244-9179. You can also visit our website at www.usvinor.
Legalization. Decriminalization. Lowest law enforcement priority. Medical marijuana. Ganja sacrament. Consumer cannabis. Industrial hemp. The world of marijuana law reform involves many different aspects of cannabis that interact nearly every public policy discussion in America, including healthcare, the economy, global climate change, law enforcement in prisons, immigration, religion, free speech, energy policy, and war. Now, we take a look at how re-legalizing marijuana will change the world in our Normal Show Live Cannabis Conversations.
All right, welcome back, everyone. Half past the hour, and we're going to Washington State, the Evergreen State, to talk to two activists up there working on a bill, SB 5073. And we're first dealing with Allison Holcomb. She's with the ACLU of Washington. Welcome back, Allison.
Thanks, Russ. Good to be back.
We've also got Kevin Oliver, who's the executive director of Washington Normal. How you doing, Kevin?
Doing well, Russ. Thank you.
All right. So the word is out. A lot of people in Washington State are taking a look at this bill, 5073. It's been through a lot of different changes. And I wanted to get you both on here so we could discuss this, because I know it's coming up for votes and comments very quickly here. Allison, could you give us basically a rundown of what this bill will do for Washington patients?
Yeah, the two key things that it's going to do for Washington patients is it's going to provide all of them protection from being arrested. And for those who are willing to register with the state, it will provide protection from prosecution as well. So essentially, they'll be exempt from the state's criminal laws regarding marijuana altogether. The other thing it's going to do for patients is it's going to create a licensed and regulated system of producers and processors who will be regulated through the Department of Agriculture, and licensed dispensaries will be regulated through the Department of Health. This way, patients will always know that they're going to have an adequate, safe, consistent, and secure source of cannabis, and they don't have to worry about sending families to the black market anymore.
Mm-hmm. Well, of course, we've heard reports that there are dispensaries operating up there in Washington. Kevin, we've heard of them operating up there in Spokane. So what's going on with those dispensaries right now, Kevin, that are in operation, and how would this bill affect them?
Well, the demographic of Washington State is more conservative on the eastern side than it is on the western side. And the eastern side just received a letter from the Department of Justice, the district attorney, to the property owners of everyone who was operating the dispensary, telling them they faced criminal prosecution for knowingly and intentionally maintaining a drug-involved premises, and they were accusing them all of drug trafficking. Ironically, he's a brother of a legislature who supports all the marijuana reform that's going on in the state up to the full legalization of marijuana. In the western, and then that gets back to the demographic difference between the eastern side and the western side, there hasn't been an issuance of a letter by the Washington, the western district attorney representing the United States Department of Justice. Mm-hmm. As far as individual attitudes go, there is a bit of self-governing going on throughout the entire state right now. As far as dispensaries go, some are tucking tail and running. Some are staying open with their chin held high. And some of them have good reason to do either one of those, I suppose.
Yeah. Well, Allison, you know, one of the things I'm getting responses from people in Washington State that are saying, oh, no, this bill is going to destroy the dispensaries. It's going to ruin the dispensaries. It's going to put them out of business. What's going to happen to these dispensary operators after this bill passes?
As soon as the bill passes, there's a provision in it that kicks in immediately that allows anyone who's operating a dispensary to file a letter of intent with the Secretary of State and avail themselves of the affirmative defense that way. It will be clear, in essence, that these are legal entities, and there will be a period of time where we'll have to wait for the Department of Agriculture and the Department of Health to engage in rulemaking to set up the system for actually issuing licenses. But in that meantime, what we have is a clear political statement from the legislature that we understand that these dispensaries need to exist. We want them to exist. And right now, all of the cities that have already passed moratoria saying we don't want dispensaries in our cities will now have a signal from the legislature that, no, we do intend these to be legal. And when those moratoria elapse, the dispensaries that are already operating in those jurisdictions will have protection.
Mm. What about the, in comment if the, on this, if you will, Allison, what about the people that are complaining that, you know, these dispensaries that are currently existing, it's going to be some sort of random lottery to pick which ones stay in business, and some of the good ones might go out of business, and some of the bad ones might, just through the luck of the draw, stay in business. Are there better controls than just a random choice?
That was a big concern for a lot of people in the state of the bill that came out of the House Ways and Means Committee. Representative Cody, who's really taken the reins in moving this bill in the House and bringing it to the floor, has introduced a striker that will be considered on the floor when the bill's brought down for a vote. And in that striker, that provision has been modified to say, basically, Department of Health, we want you to start with the number of having one dispensary for 20,000 residents in each county. If we have more dispensary applicants than that, then come up with a system for providing a random selection process for those dispensaries that have already met a merit-based qualification standard. In other words, in order to even apply to get a license, you need to have some minimum inspection requirements have been met, et cetera, background checks, that sort of thing. I think with a number of one dispensary to 20,000 people in a county, we're probably going to be okay and hopefully not have to kick in that random selection process, but we'll see, and that may be an issue that'll have to be revisited in future years.
Okay, but to be clear about this, and Kevin, I'll let you chime in first, to be clear about this, the dispensaries that exist right now in Washington State, are they legal, are they illegal, are they in danger if we don't pass this?
They're not legal.
Sorry, go ahead, Kevin.
they're not legal. There's no law that allows for the sale of medical marijuana in Washington State. There isn't. I mean, there are people doing it left and right, but there is no clause in the RCW that allows it. There's no licensure in place. The word dispensary is nowhere in the RCW right now.
Mm-hmm. So Allison, to put this simply, we're just saying we're going from having no legal dispensaries to having legal dispensaries.
That's right, Russ.
Okay. Let's get another subject in here because folks in the chat room are kind of peppering me with questions here. I want to get to the registry part of this. One activist in Washington State actually said that having to be on this registry system, you'd have to register with the government like a sex offender. And I was kind of shocked by that hyperbole. Allison, can you tell us about this registry requirement?
Sure. As you may know, Russ, the ACLU has been opposed to having a medical marijuana registry in our law, in our state, ever since law enforcement has been asking for them over the past several years. In fact, Washington State is currently the only medical marijuana state that does not have a registry. And as you probably know, half of the registries that we currently have are mandatory and the other half are voluntary. What the ACLU of Washington did this past year is that we started sitting down with the University of Washington Computer Science and Engineering Privacy and Security Lab, which is a cutting-edge research lab that looks at how can we design systems that hold data to have the greatest privacy protections possible. We sat down with these folks and said if we wanted to make sure that we didn't have a centralized list of names and addresses that could be accessed by law enforcement, the federal government, a hacker, somebody in the Department of Health disclosing it involuntarily. If we want to make sure that that list doesn't exist at all, how could we do that? And the folks at the lab helped us create language that's in the bill right now that makes sure that when Department of Health goes about designing the registry, that it will not have that centralized database and that will have state-of-the-art privacy-protecting features. And, in fact, over a series of meetings, the folks at the lab helped us see how this could work, and they have a proposal for a program that they will present to Department of Health when rulemaking begins. And furthermore, we made sure that the bill contains in it a requirement that the Department of Health has to consult with the UW lab during the rulemaking process to create this registry. And the design that they would have would essentially keep all of the patient's information with that patient's healthcare professional. No identifying information would go to the Department of Health. All that the Department of Health would get would essentially be a digital photograph of the patient, and then they would generate a random number to attach to that photograph so that the patient then has a card that they can show to the law enforcement officer that has their photo so that the law enforcement officer can see, yes, this is the person that's registered, and then a random number. Then the law enforcement officer checks the DOH database just to see if that number is valid. So there's no name, no address, nothing at Department of Health that can be traced to that patient.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so this registry is voluntary, right, as far as this bill
goes?
That's
right.
Okay, voluntary registry. And so unlike a sex offender registry, it's not mandatory, it's not searchable by the public, and they don't force you to go to your neighbor's house and knock on doors and tell them you live there, right?
And it's not maintained by law enforcement, and you don't have to register with your local sheriff, and they don't put you up on a website where everybody in your neighborhood can see where you live. So,
right.
Yeah, very different from a sex offender registry.
Yeah, I was really shocked by that statement, too, because, you know, when we have all these other medical marijuana states that have registries, both voluntary and mandatory, I mean, here in Oregon, it's a mandatory registry, and the feds have tried to subpoena these records before. They've tried to get at them, and every time they're turned away by the courts. And while it would be better to just have legalization and no registry, I think having a card in your wallet, you know, people say, I don't want to be on a list. Well, if that list is the list of people who don't get arrested, that's a good list to be on, don't you think?
I would agree with you, but yeah. I do understand that patients don't want to be on lists that are vulnerable to letting people know that they are people who have serious terminal and debilitating medical conditions, mm-hmm. right? I mean, that's the problem,
sure.
is that if you're on the list, somebody knows that you have HIV or cancer, and nobody wants that.
Right. And since it's voluntary here, if someone does want to maintain that privacy and just continue the way they are now with their doctor recommendation, they can still do that.
That's right. They can, and an added feature to the bill is that it explicitly provides that people who don't want to register but do have their valid documentation cannot be taken into custody. They can't be arrested.
No.
Officers can still collect evidence and send that evidence onto the prosecutor's office for consideration of whether or not they want to file charges, and then the patient will still have the affirmative defense to raise. But that patient can't be arrested, can't be booked into jail.
Mm. So if you want to keep on keeping on with what you're doing now, having a letter, that's going to get better. And if you want even better than that, you can get a card.
Correct.
All right. Now, let's segue here into another feature of this that I've been reading about. And this is going on in other states, too, where there seems to be this concern that patient rolls are growing too quickly and that it's because of these medical marijuana clinics that you know, people go in with their and get their recommendations from these specialty clinics. And last I checked, this bill had some language in it about having it be a primary care physician. It couldn't be one of these specialty clinics. Has that cleared up? Is there any changes in that?
The language that has changed is previously, when it came out of the Senate, there was language that was problematic on two counts. One said that a healthcare professional could not examine or offer to examine a patient primarily or solely for the purpose of authorizing the medical use of cannabis. That provision has been taken out altogether.
Good.
And the reason for that clearly is that the healthcare professionals, primary care physicians who can't authorize cannabis, like VA physicians, for example, they need to be able to make a referral to another professional that they trust who can make that authorization.
Mm-hmm.
And so, obviously, we wanted to make sure that referral process was still intact. And so that language is gone altogether. The second provision that was troubling was a provision that previously said that healthcare professionals could operate a business that was primarily for the purpose of authorizing the medical use of cannabis. And that, to address that concern, that language was changed to solely. So a healthcare professional cannot operate a business that is solely about authorizing the medical use of cannabis. So any healthcare professional that is providing any sort of health treatment other than writing you an authorization is not going to run into problems with that law anymore.
Oh, okay. So a clinic that was offering, say, you know, therapeutic massage, acupuncture, other treatments in addition to doing medical cannabis recs would be fine.
You got it.
All right. Excellent. Well, let me wind up here with Kevin from Washington Normal. Another little amendment I saw, it just totally made my day, coming from a Republican who said that Washington State medical marijuana patients should be reimbursed for pizza. Any comments?
Yeah. Thanks for giving me the fun one. Well, yeah, it should be said that on one hand, personally, I eat a lot of pizza. It's a healthy pizza. It costs a little more. But I'm afraid of the ramifications that might have for a state that's already facing a budget crunch. Just to put that out. But to comment seriously on that amendment, that amendment, as well as several other amendments that are going to be heard on the House floor today or tomorrow, and tomorrow's the end of the session. Alice and I have discussed this. They could make or break a lot of the different aspects of this bill, and unless Representative Cody's striker comes in, as Allison referenced Representative Cody, you know, the pizza amendment, as well as some others that would put, say, a moratoria on allowance for counties and cities to restrict dispensaries. That one, as well as the pizza amendment, could pass potentially because these are being heard on the floor as we speak. It's literally down to the wire on some of this. And correct me if I'm wrong on that. I'm trying to be accurate about it. And that's my comment.
Okay.
I kind of hope. It doesn't. I don't want the pizza amendment to make it. I want Representative Cody Lisa Stryker to make it, and not much else.
Okay.
From what my advisors have told me.
Well, you know, Allison, I was wondering about that too, because you know I live here in Portland, off of the 205, and Vancouver's just 4 miles away. I could use some free pizza.
Yeah, I think Representative Anderson was trying to introduce a little levity into what's obviously a very serious topic, and understandably, that struck a lot of people wrong. I mean, so many people have witnessed their loved ones struggling with the ability to keep food down, and
yeah,
what an impact that's had on their final days. And, you know, point well taken. It was, you know, probably a...
It's just weird to see that things like that get introduced in a legislature to make a point.
However,
like that.
Yeah, exactly. And there were reporters that followed up with him.
Good. One last question here, Allison. We had a question from our chat room asking, is there still a requirement for the doctors to report the number of recommendations they make per quarter?
That amendment's gone. That's
okay.
Been gone for a while. That no longer exists.
All right, excellent. And let's wind up here, Allison. If I know there's people listening in the chat room that might have more questions than we have time to go into. Is there a way they can contact you or the ACLU to ask more of these questions about the bill?
Absolutely, they can visit the website
ACLU-WA.org. All right, ACLU-WA.org. And Kevin Oliver from Washington Normal, your contact?
-WA.
Kevin, can you hear me okay? All right, well, I want to thank Allison.
Hear me or not, but...
Yeah, we're having some Skype difficulties, guys, so I'm going to wind this up. I want to thank Allison Holcomb from ACLU of Washington and Kevin Oliver from Washington Normal. Thanks so much for joining us here on Normal Show Live. We appreciate it.
I'm a doctor.
I'm a lawyer.
I'm a journalist.
I'm a student.
I'm a teacher.
I'm a representative.
I have cancer.
The outdated laws of prohibition are more dangerous than the plant itself.
I lost my scholarship.
I was fired.
20 million arrests since 1965. This is getting ridiculous.
Our prisons are overcrowded with nonviolent offenders.
We have the opportunity to change.
This is costing our country billions of dollars.
Making my family and I fight in a courtroom is difficult enough when I'm already fighting through chemotherapy.
There's no reason to be scared by tradition anymore.
We can stop this.
We can stop this.
We are the American people.
We can stop this.
And you have our support.
We are old.
Young.
Straight.
Gay.
We're every race and nationality.
And we're not going to give up.
You can tax it.
You can regulate it.
Apply age restrictions.
You can create millions of new jobs.
We can save our economy.
President Obama?
It's time for legalization.
Legalization?
Yes.
We
can.
This has been a public service message.
The Normal PAC, the political arm of Normal, makes contributions to members of Congress and select state legislators who support our policies and advance legislation towards that end. Elected officials need to see that those of us who support legalization are serious about changing policy, are about more than just getting high, and understand the importance of supporting politicians who support us. Please make a contribution today to the Normal PAC and send it to the Normal Office in Washington, D.C., 1600 K Street Northwest, Suite 501, Washington, D.C., 20006. Or go to the Normal website and make a generous contribution. It is an investment in our future and will help assure we finally re-legalize the responsible use of marijuana in this country. Thank you.
Thank you.
As High Times Senior Cultivation Editor, I'm often called into the field and asked to sample or even identify exotic strains of marijuana in their natural habitat. Now, for the first time, I've compiled more than 120 of my favorite strains into this single field guide designed to fit into your pocket as you travel the world in search of your favorite plant. From Friend's Closet Grow Room to the wilds of Northern California, this single guide covers all of today's best-known strains, plus heirlooms and throwbacks, including High Times quality photos and information on each variety's genetic heritage and growing characteristics, plus my personal notes on aroma, flavor, and potency. So this is Danny Danko, author of the official High Times Field Guide to Marijuana Strains, wishing you good times and great ganja.
The official High Times Field Guide to Marijuana Strains is available at hightimes.com and finer bookstores.
This is Normal Show Live.
We're locking up people that take a couple of puffs of marijuana, and the next thing you know, they got 10 years. They've got mandatory sentences, and these judges say they throw up their hands and say, there's nothing we can do, it's mandatory sentences. We've got to take a look at what we're considering crimes.
When the Reverend Pat Robertson from television's The 700 Club...
criminalizing marijuana, criminalizing the possession of a few ounces of pot and that kind of thing, I mean, it's just...
makes more sense on the marijuana issue than the President, the Congress, and the Supreme Court.
It's costing us a fortune, and it's ruining young people. The young people go into prisons, they come up, they go in as youths, and they come out as hardened criminals, and it's not a good thing.
You know we're winning.
The effects of marijuana prohibition are felt by all Americans in every walk of life, regardless of race, creed, color, religion, social status, wealth, gender, sexual orientation, or even one's use or non-use of marijuana. As the Marijuana Smokers Lobby, Normal hears the stories of these average Americans and brings them to the attention of our policymakers and our fellow citizens in this segment we call Normal Newsmakers.
All right, folks, welcome back to the show. We've got some updates for you on pending legislation that need your urgent support here. First of all, in Connecticut Normal is letting us know that there is a bill for the decriminalization of small amounts of marijuana. This is SB 1014. It's the governor's marijuana decriminalization bill. Apparently, the governor's office came up with this one. It's expected to be voted on by the Judiciary Committee in the state of Connecticut tomorrow. So there's still some issues that have to be worked out as far as local storage and testing of marijuana and, you know, juvenile issues and so on. So they're still working on this bill. And Connecticut Normal's calling on you to call the key legislators who are on the fence about this bill and ask them to focus on this over the next 24 hours. So you can get information on that. If you're in Connecticut and you would like some more information, send me an email at stash@normal.org or just check out our CapWiz Center, our Take Action Center from normal.org. Look on the left, you'll find the words Take Action. And when you click there, you'll see all the different states and all the different bills that are in play. And you can click on the state and send your, you can send your own email. You can send a pre-written email. You can get the phone numbers, the addresses to make all the communication you need to help get support for this SB 1014 in the state of Connecticut. We've also got our eyes on the state of Montana, Big Sky Country, where the House and the Senate have both passed the repeal of medical marijuana in that state. And of course, medical marijuana in the state of Montana was passed by citizen initiative. So here we have the House and the Senate working together to repeal a law passed by the people. There's only one step left here, and that's Governor Brian Schweitzer in the state of Montana. The bill is on the governor's desk. He hasn't done anything with it yet. And there's three possible things that could happen. He could sign it and repeal medical marijuana. He could not sign it and allow the repeal to happen without his signature. Or he could veto the bill and send it back to the House and Senate, where there is not likely to be a two-thirds majority necessary to override his veto. Obviously, we're hoping for the last option there, that he vetoes this bill and sends it back. If anything, just for the precedent that the legislature should not be overturning initiatives of the people. The people should be in charge of those things. It's a little different situation than California, where the legislature couldn't overturn Prop 215 if they wanted to, because in the California Constitution, only the people can amend or strike an initiative language. But apparently in the state of Montana, that's not the case, and the legislature has taken their prerogative and gone to repeal this state-passed law. So please, get on our CAPWIS Center. Look for the state of Montana in that list. Again, just look for Take Action on the normal front page. Click on the state of Montana, and you'll get all the contact information for Governor Brian Schweitzer. Urge him to protect patients. Don't turn 30,000 Montanans into criminals overnight. And please veto that repeal bill. We also have a story here that I wanted to fill you in on that came up over the Reuters newswire before I went to air today. And the headline is Mass Kidnappings, New Cash Cow for Mexican Drug Gangs. We've been following this Mexican drug war, and this apparently is a troubling development from Reuters News is reporting. Mexican drug gangs branching out into new criminal activity are earning a steady stream of cash from the mass kidnapping of migrants, making the already arduous journey to the United States even more lethal. The trek across Mexico has long been dangerous for the hundreds of thousands of undocumented migrants, mostly Central Americans, who try their luck each year, risking robbery and death from fast moving freight trains or dehydration in the desert. But in the past couple of years, the feared Zetas cartel has raised the stakes for migrants and created another security headache for President Felipe Calderon's government, which has spent millions of dollars embroiled in a brutal drug war. According to a 21-year-old from Honduras, he said, quote, "I was kidnapped for 3 days during his 1,800-mile journey from southern Mexico to the U.S. border. There's a cargo train that they all jump on called the Beast, and it's mounted by hundreds of illegal migrants who every day perilously cling to the sides and roof of the ride north and then risk capture by the gangs who know they're unlikely to call the police for help." Quote, again, Wilson, this was the 21-year-old who says, quote, "It was dark. They pulled us off the train with automatic weapons and locked us in small rooms. They beat us and asked for the numbers of relatives in the U.S. Otherwise, they said you had to work for the gang or they kill you," end quote. Last August, 72 mostly Central American migrants were lined up and executed on an isolated ranch in the northern state of Tamaulipas, the main battleground between the Zetas and their erstwhile employers, the Gulf Cartel. Well, this, of course, is very troubling, and it just underscores the violence and the lengths to which these drug criminals will go to supply the drug needs of the United States. And it's been pointed out numerous times that marijuana is their number one cash crop that they're using to help fund their activities. We need to take that business away from them. We are more than willing to grow the marijuana in the United States to supply American tokers. We got plenty of farmers here in this country who are real good at growing pot, and we won't have to see any of these migrants being captured and killed and tortured and kidnapped to do it. You know, this is something that needs to be in the minds of all of our legislators as they're looking at ways of solving this drug crisis. These sorts of situations are going to continue so long as we allow them to control the lucrative market in drugs for the United States. And that lucrative market begins with marijuana. We all know that in the United States of America, we have 15 million monthly adult, over the age of 18, monthly adult cannabis consumers in this country. When you look at all other illegal drugs combined, there's about 6 million monthly users. And this just gives lie to their scare tactic that the DEA and the drug czar want to tell us, which is, well, if we legalized marijuana, the Mexican drug gangs would just push other drugs. Really? To whom? Who are these people who, when they now have access to legal marijuana, are going to decide, well, you know what, now that I can buy legal pot, I'd like some illegal Mexican meth? That's just not the way it works. People's appetites for drugs are not transferable. The 15 million people who are smoking cannabis that they get, some of them get it illegally from Mexico, when they are able to get it legally in the United States, they're still going to be pot smokers. They're going to, these Mexican drug organizations that are selling to a willing market of 15 million customers are going to lose 15 million customers and be down to just 6 million. Well, if you combine them all, right? 15 plus 6, what, 21 million drug customers in America? That's probably not accurate because some people do both marijuana and other drugs. Let's say it's 18 million. If there's 18 million customers and you're down to 6 million, if you cut your customer base in two-thirds in any business, wouldn't that have a severe effect on running your business? I think it would. No, the Mexican drug organizations are not going to become Boy Scouts if we legalize marijuana. You know, oh, they're not just going to give up crime. They'll do kidnapping and they'll smuggle other drugs and they'll smuggle weapons. Yeah, sure they will. Because criminals do criminal things. But should we be funding these criminals by allowing them to control the marijuana market? If we take the marijuana market away from them, yes, they will still be criminals. They'll be less well-funded criminals. They'll have less audience. They'll have less clientele for their product. They'll have less access to Americans for their other products. It makes perfect sense. And that, of course, is why our government can't seem to get their minds around it. It's time to legalize for everyone, not just the medical users, not just the religious users, although those uses are perfectly valid and acceptable. But if a person wants to use cannabis and another person wants to grow it for them and sell it to them, that's got to be legal. Otherwise, Mexican criminals are going to control it, and we're going to continue to see people executed, tortured, and that violence is going to continue to spill in the United States, and the corruption is going to continue to infect our law enforcement and border patrol. Legalize now. Save Mexico. Save the United States. I'm Radical Russ. Thanks for joining us for Hour 1 for Cannabis Carry and Ganja John. This is the Normal Foundation, and this is Normal Show Live. We're back tomorrow, and until next time, take care of each other, tokers.
This is Normal Show Live, the voice of the marijuana nation.
Take it on one more time. You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it. You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it. You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you try it, you roll it, you smoke it, and it goes down smooth.